Welcome to the CWA Radio Network, brought to you 7 days a week by Christian Women Affiliate. Today's show is His Love Extended, hosted by Julie Gorman, whose passion is to see your passions come to life. His Love Extended Ministries, committed to empowering and equipping women to fulfill their God-given design. For the next 60 minutes, we invite you to join us live via the chat room. Click to talk with the host or call in via our toll-free call-in number, 347-850-8893. After the show, we invite you to join us at ChristianWomenAffiliate.com. Here's your host.
Well, good morning and welcome back to His Love Extended Ministries Blog Talk Radio broadcast. Thanks so much for joining with us today. We have quite the lineup. Joining me today is my amazing husband and best friend, Greg Gorman, and another incredible couple, Hugh and Cindy McMenamin. Together, we're going to highlight real life, share some powerful testimonies, some practical tips to gain a closer connection. Hugh, Cindy, welcome to today's broadcast. We're excited to highlight your newest book, When Couples Walk Together. Thanks so much for joining with us.
Thanks for having us, Julie.
It's great to be here, Julie and Greg.
Great. And Greg, you're on the line as well, correct?
Good afternoon, morning, depending on which time zone you're in, I guess.
There you go. There you go. Well, I always love to get a couple story. So, Cindy, why don't you start us out? How did the two of you actually meet?
Okay, well, we actually met through through my college pastor, who used to be the youth pastor at Hughes Church. And we had gotten this new college pastor, and I was kind of his right-hand person, just in leading both the high school and the college group. And he brought back his band. He was in a band with Hugh and a couple other guys called the Narrow Street Band, and they did a reunion concert in my hometown in the park there, and I was working for a newspaper at that time, doing an internship, had just bought a nice new 35-millimeter camera, because that's what we used back then, and my college pastor, Tom, asked if I'd take pictures at the concert. So as I was taking pictures, I noticed the bass player. He had a really nice smile and really nice arms, so I kept taking pictures of him. And afterwards, I guess Hugh had asked my college pastor, Tom, he said, who was the girl taking pictures? And he said, oh, that's Cindy. She's my right-hand girl here. Hey, you guys would, you know, you guys should meet. You guys could hit it off real well. And Hugh was Tom's right-hand man there in his college group as well. So having that personal recommendation really helped. Tom said, he'd make a great husband. He's studying for the ministry. I wasn't so sure about the ministry at that point, but I thought he's a great guy. So
that's a lot of
we
fun.
Started writing letters back and forth.
So, Hugh, at what point did you realize Cindy was the one?
I think for me, Julie, it was a series of a growing awareness, you know, of several of she's the one encounters over the course of the first, you know, several months of our dating phase. Just things I would gradually learn about her, her values, just the things she had as goals in life, just her spiritual devotion, and just all of that started culminating and convincing me over time that I think I'd really like to spend the rest of my life with this person.
Aww. Wow. And Cindy, did you feel the same way? At what point did you realize, like, wow, he's it, he's the one?
You know, I always laughed at people who said love at first sight and stuff, because how can you really know if you love someone when you first see them? But there was something about his smile. He very much reminded me of my sister's husband, and she was in a wonderful marriage. Just the way he smiled, I thought, oh, he kind of smiles like Steve. And, I wrote him a letter right away, and he wrote one back. And, again, I saw in there what I wanted, so immediately I just took that to the Lord, and I said, okay, God, you say in Psalm 84:11, no good thing will you withhold from those that walk uprightly. If he's a good thing, please don't withhold him. And, you know, God didn't withhold him. We were married just about a year and a month after we met.
Wow.
Outstanding. So where did the idea for When Couples Walk Together come from? Was it a personal experience, or was there another reason that y'all came together to write this book?
Well, you know, we often joke, Julie and Greg, that we wrote this book primarily for ourselves because we realized after 20-plus years of marriage, there was still ways that we could get better at walking closer together and having a closer connection. But it comes through our 20 years plus also of ministry together, of seeing couples struggling, to stay close together, just the interpersonal things that they go through that we just really feel is a burden, and knowing that the message like this could really help couples you know, do some healing and get closer as a husband and wife.
Cool.
What was the process like? I know, you know, writing a book is a lot. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. There's a lot of soul searching that goes on. What was it like working on a project like this together?
Well, first of all, we were driving down the freeway, and that's how we kind of came up with the table of contents. I was telling Hugh, if we were to write this, what are some things that we've done that have really helped us grow closer together through the years? And we had just a fun time reminiscing some of those things that became chapter titles. And then when we got the contract for the book, as we began to lay it out, I began to draft some things and run them by him. And it's funny, we'd tell certain things, and you know how two people have two different perspectives. So when we got to certain stories that we'd share, like when I was mad at him at the restaurant, and he kind of put his side in there. And at first I wondered if I'd get defensive, if if this
right.
was going to be a volatile project. But I ended up discovering a lot about him as we wrote together, and he discovered some things about me. And we grew closer together, too, as we wrote it and as we learned and taught ourselves.
You know, I think it's so, it's a great dynamic. I know that as I'm writing, there's a lot of times where there's that aha moment. And so I can only imagine working on a project like this together of just the intimacy that was probably shared, the revelations that came up. Were there some surprises or were there some shocks at maybe some of the battles that you faced or some of the things that surfaced up that the Lord even, you know, gave you revelation in your marriage?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we do have a chapter in our book about sharing a project together as a way to connect closer, and this definitely was a project that forced us to re-examine some things in our lives as far as are we practically doing these things and have we maybe been letting a few things slip, and let's get back to that. Mm-hmm. So it did raise some awareness in our own lives about in our own marriage about let's make sure that we're really doing this and that we're not just speaking from theory but from a practical way. You know, we're trying to do this in our lives.
And when we wrote one of the chapters we wrote was called Finding an Encouraging Word. And so when the manuscript was passed back to him, he would put in some, just some of those phrases and words that he needed to hear. And so as I would get the manuscript back from him, as he added his input, I would be thinking, wow, those are things I haven't really said in a while. I need to say more things. Or if he would write about an incident, I would think, I thought he forgot all about that. That must have meant more to him than I thought.
Wow.
So I was reminded of a lot of things and encouraged to be more of what he needs through this book.
We had a little bit of time to talk prior to the broadcast, and I shared with you, and I'd just love to share with the listeners, too. I can't recommend a book more highly than yours, and the reason for that is because I love how you write. You write practically. You write spiritually. You know, and a lot of times I read through a book, and there's a lot of deep spiritual meaning, but the practicalities of actually walking it out maybe aren't as strong. And so that's one of the things I love about the way that you write, Cindy. And of course, now you too, Hugh, welcome to the publishing industry. But
yeah,
the
I'm enjoying it.
Good, good. You know, but the practicalities of what you share in this book, they're life applications. So let's just talk about maybe some of the practicalities and the reality of marriage. You know, in today's society, what are some of those primary stressors, and what are some of the ways that you help maybe couples reunite and then walk closer together in a closer connection?
Wow, yeah, there's so much, it seems, facing us in marriage today, Julie. It seems like there's so much set against us to fail and to give up. You know, in our current national situation, just financial pressures, I know, are huge as a point of stress for a lot of marriages, and we see it in our own ministry and with our friends and neighbors. And if there's the slightest fracture of a stress happening in a marriage, additional pressures is just going to spread it wide open. So I think finances really and just money issues really put a lot of strain on marriages. Living here in Southern California, and I'm sure it's not just here, just the busyness of life. There is so much to do and so many opportunities, especially where we live. Within an hour, you can do and drive and almost anything that you're interested in as a hobby or a sport. And so I think just the busyness and pace of life, it can be a real stress.
And also, I'm in my, mid-40s now. Hugh just turned 50. We're seeing a lot of couples our age who've been married nearly 25 years begin to hit these stressful times, whether it's because of financial pressures or the kids growing up or the emptiness. And they're calling it quits after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow, I mean, that makes you look around and see that the world is very friendly when you want to exit a marriage. There aren't a whole lot of people to gather around you and say, wait, you can do this, and we can walk you through that. And Hugh's seen a lot of that just in his marital counseling. And so, yeah, the burdens and the pressures are very real, but they are not insurmountable. They are something that can still be overcome.
It's a vulnerable kind of stage of life in that there are a lot of maybe physiological things going on with our bodies. And you take that in with the fact that it's also a time of kind of reflection where you're looking back over the last 20 years of your life and you're thinking, wow, I may only have maybe 20 more years of my life. And so it's kind of that really awkward, vulnerable stage. So what are some of the important steps that a couple can do to enjoy that marriage journey, to recommit to one another and step forward and stay committed?
Julie, we kind of relate the journey of a marriage to an airline flight, and there's just so many examples and that are similar in a marriage and being on a long airplane flight. In fact, I just finished one. I was flew overseas and logged about 30-plus hours on a plane. And, there's a lot of similarities. You know, I see, people as they're getting on the plane trying to, cram a carry-on bag into an overhead compartment, and they're carrying too much on the plane. And a lot of times we come into marriage carrying too much baggage, and some stuff we just need to leave behind. That's part of, I think, enjoying the marriage together. And knowing that you're in it for the long haul. One stretch that I had was over 9 hours when on a single flight, and you got to find creative ways to stay committed to that flight because it's going to be a while. And how do you stay invested? How do you stay, interested? Those are some things that we've learned that to enjoy the marriage.
When I think about, because you use that illustration all throughout the book of just the, the flight, the too much baggage and being committed, where did all of that come from? Cindy, was it just in all of the travels that you did, or was there a kind of a moment that you guys agreed together this would be a great way to make, a good illustrative point that can stay with people? How did
well,
that
actually,
come
Hugh came up with that idea. He came home from, I do a lot of flying across the country a couple weekends a month, but he does the really, every once in a while, maybe once, twice a year at the most, we'll do a really long international flight, which I've never done. And so he started talking about these parallels, and he said, wouldn't it be great to write a book sometime on the parallels between flying and marriage? And he started talking to me about them, and I realized there was some good insights there.
Yeah.
And that never became the book in itself, but we found ways to weave that idea through this one, because you really do have to look at marriage as a journey, as something that you need to enjoy the journey, and also a place where you got to keep your eyes on that final destination. We want to go the distance together. We don't want to bail out early. We want to trust the pilot who's God, who's the one that's flying that plane, basically, that we need to put our trust in. And it's helped us personally. As he began to talk about it, I began to see the similarities as well and think, that's a good way to look at it.
We had a question come in through the chat room. It said, what was the hardest chapter for you guys to write together?
Oh, wow.
Wow.
or let's not do the hardest, maybe one of the more difficult ones.
I had to be careful with writing flirting again because, you know, people in our congregation are reading this. You can't reveal too many secrets that way. Seriously, I would think, and then Hugh, you can add to this or say what you're thinking. I think the most difficult one for me, maybe chapters days 29 and 30, when troubles loom large and when the path looks impossible, because we had just gotten word that another couple in our church, another marriage was dissolving. And as I wrote that chapter, my heart was really heavy, and I realized that there's all sorts of extenuating circumstances sometimes, and it's difficult sometimes to just hold that line and say, you know, God can do anything, but we truly believe that. And even though we haven't walked through the depths that some marriages have, we still know the same God who can guide you through those depths. And I think as we wrote that one, we just spent a lot of time in prayer over that because we realized there would be some people that would be reading that and they would be saying, okay, is she judging me because I got out of a previous marriage? And we wanted love and grace, but most of all, just a dependence and faith in God to come through in that chapter so that people would realize no matter where you are, no matter what situation you're in, he can get you through. It may look impossible, but he's a God of the impossible.
Amen. Amen. How about you, Hugh? Same chapters or?
I think we did a chapter 12 or day 12 about sharing your heart. And I think that really, like you said, asked earlier, what did this book do for us? It really forced us to look at, are we really, praying a lot together? And we do, but we could do a lot more. I mean, again, the business of life, we end up, you know, kind of doing our own thing and running our own, you know, activities during the day and our ministries. But just stopping to say, you know, we really need to connect, you know, spiritually through times of prayer. I think that was a real challenge for us and caused us to really address that more clearly in our lives. Sharing a project, this book probably was the most, you know, the biggest project we've done together. And so when we've done it, there were some challenges, but we said we need to do more of this kind of stuff.
Right.
I agree with you. It's challenging when you're writing something and you're saying, okay, wow, we really need to be better at this. And and sometimes, you know, we have to get vulnerable and say, hey, we don't have all the answers in this area, but this is where we're still growing as well.
Right, right. That's what Greg and I have the privilege. We get to do a lot of projects together. What ends up happening? And Greg, of course, you can feel free to chime in. But you know, we minister out so much, and I'm sure you guys see this in ministry too. As you're giving and giving and giving, there has to be that intentionality of coming back together and being just as intentional in serving one another as we are maybe serving a congregation or serving a small group or serving in a ministry capacity or all the different demands that are required of us. And I think that that has been one of the things that we've had to come back to, is to make sure that we are just as intentional in our focus of loving one another and serving one another. And you bring out aspects of that all throughout your book, of putting one another's needs above your own and really striving to make sure that you're not just trying to minister to you or God, you know, take care of my needs, but, take care of, help me to take care of my spouse's needs as well. So I love that aspect of that. Greg, do you have anything you want to add there? Or?
I don't really. You summed it up. I completely agree with what you said. So how about that?
All right. So that we can take away from that of being intentional and of being purposeful in our marriages. And I think that that's what you guys did through this journey, through the day 29 and 30. And the day 12, it was all of it, as you were sharing, I just thought about our own lives and how it's coming back and applying those things that we minister out day in and day out. All right, so this one's for the guys. Greg, Hugh, are you guys ready?
Sure.
Ready.
From a husband's point of view, what advice would you offer wives as maybe some of the most important ways that we can communicate respect and to help foster intimacy in our marriages?
You can fire first, Hugh.
Oh, okay, thanks, Greg. I think, Julie, one of the things that we learned that we see is that, well, first of all, you know, I think you know, husbands have really been hammered over the years, just, you know, in the media and just their stereotypes, you know, in the entertainment world. And, you know, we're almost made to look like a bunch of Homer Simpsons, you know, that we're just fumbling and bumbling and we always get it wrong. And that's not, you know, we do make mistakes and sometimes we really blow it. But I think one thing that Cindy and I talked about is that, you know, wives could, communicating respect is, you know, giving him that space and grace, you know, to take the lead, to take the lead in his marriage and in his family. And realizing he's going to make some mistakes, he's not always going to make the perfect decision, but that's really the way God designed him, and to let him fulfill that role and find his way through that in a supportive, encouraging way. I think that really demonstrates respect for a guy in a marriage.
That's great. How about you, Greg? What would you say?
I would second what Hugh says, you know, really, for the most part. I think that grace on both sides is real important, and if we can, you know, both look to support each other in our respective roles inside the home, then that automatically communicates respect because we're working together, you know. And I think that when it comes to being the final authority, of course, as the head of the household, respecting that position, because it's a heavy position sometimes. It's a heavy seat to hold, and biblically we're commanded to do that. But we've got to have, of course, the support of our wives in that process as well, you know, to be able to accomplish that, and of course communicate that to our kids and to everybody else around us as well.
Cindy, let me toss one your way then too, as far as intimacy and developing intimacy in marriage and loving your husband. What have you found either through your personal experience or maybe as you're out ministering to women that would be a great or maybe think something that's lacking that you see that wives we could do a better job at of loving our husbands?
Well, I've heard it said by so many, and then again in a follow-up to this, my book, When a Woman Inspires Her Husband, I've heard lots of husbands, and Hugh included, say that a man needs respect more than he needs love, and I think that's because respect to a man is what communicates love to them. And so men need to be admired, too, for who they are, not who we want them to be or who we wish they were. And I've found that intimacy is hindered in our marriage when I don't respect him in the way that he needs. And also, going back to what he said earlier, just letting him take the lead, I can very easily step in and do things my way. And I can consult him about it, but in a way where I've kind of decided that my way is better. And he picks up on that very easily, and sometimes I don't. And a way that, you know, to honor him and realize he's the head of our marriage. He really does know what's going on. I might think I know better in this situation, but I need to give him the proper respect, the same kind of respect that I would want, and realize that he needs it even more than I do. And so that's been something that I've tried to communicate to wives as well, that your husbands need to know you believe in him and you respect him.
How about for the wife? What is she needing?
You know, you talked about intimacy there, Julie. I think you know the wives need to know that they're cherished, that they're still the one, that the husband still finds her, attractive and let's just admit it, you know, God created us as visual, physical beings, and I think that plays a huge part too in the marriage. That you know, we still want to hold their hand and hug them and kiss them goodnight. You know, those kinds of things. I think that really helps a wife know that she's the only one that catches our eye.
Right,
and just that understanding as well that. You know, to know that my husband loves me for who I am, for him to recognize when I am trying, to know that he is just as vested in the relationship as I am, because I talk to a lot of wives, Julie, who believe they're the only ones working on their marriage. They're the only ones reading the book about how to draw closer. They're the only ones that are going to him saying, we need to pray together. And yet, for me to know that he is just as invested in the marriage as I am, that he wants it just as much as me, he might not express that in the same ways. But his heart is there, and he wants us to work as well.
It's actually a great segue into the next question for Hugh. Why do you think that men will want to read this book as well as the women?
Yeah, that's we really tried hard, Greg, to really communicate in the book, on a man's level, just the tone and the language, and even some of the illustrations. We really wanted men to realize that, that we're speaking to them too, and this book is something that they'd want to pick up. And I've read a lot of marriage books, and you guys probably have too. And a lot of times it does strictly come from the woman's perspective, and we really wanted to strike a balance there with my voice and Cindy's voice. I think some of the practicality parts of the book I think will speak to a man. The day-to-day format, the things at the ends of the chapters, like taking the next step, going the extra mile, small doable things that I think guys resonate with. They can check it off the list and go, wow, I did that today, and that feels good.
You think this book would pair well in like a group discussion for maybe a marriage class or something if they wanted to go through it together?
I think definitely that we did have that in mind, that we're thinking about if a couple picked up this book or several couples that wanted to meet regularly, that they could pick this up,
right.
Digest small portions of the book and then find at the end of each chapter ways that they can just have a lively discussion about that and go week to week finding out how we're doing and what did you get accomplished this week. Yeah, definitely. This would make a great small group Bible study.
In fact, a church in Maryland just bought 100 copies of this book for all their married couples in the congregation to go through a 31-day walk beginning January 1st. So they're going to do that kind of as a church, the married couples, and we were really excited about that.
That's great. I think that when we come together like that in groups, there's a whole nother layer that's added to that because I think we realize the similarities in a lot of the same struggles that other couples are having as well, and there's some comfort in that actually, because we don't feel maybe as defeated at different times or as like our situation is quite as unique as it is. And of course, iron sharpens iron, so there's always that factor too, right?
Definitely, and in fact, the very first page of our book is just simply a list of acknowledgments. And it's an acknowledgement of other couples that have built into our lives. We each need some allies in this marriage life. People who will support us, encourage us, speak to us the words we need to hear honestly when we need to hear them. And so we really thank people in our lives that we've walked the journey with too, and that we've learned from, and that have been examples to us.
And a lot of them have been married a lot longer than we have, and they've gone through stages that we haven't yet hit, and those people have been we've never really sat down and had a study with them, but as we've gone through life with them and just allowed them into our lives, they've greatly encouraged us as a couple.
One of the things that I watch in marriages is there are times where there is maybe one believer who is more on fire than the other. And we've had a couple questions in the chat room that are applicable to that, asking how could this book apply to an unequally yoked marriage? And the second question that was kind of surfaced in there is, what about the wife or husband that's listening whose spouse isn't a believer? How can this book help them walk hand in hand through life together with them? Are there some different nuggets that could be taken from what you've written?
We actually kept in mind, I know with the books that I've written, there's a percentage of unbelievers who will pick up that book who maybe have some sort of a spiritual interest. Maybe they don't, but there's something that draws them. And Hugh and I realized there will be wives who will pick up this book and read it, wishing their husbands would read it with them, wishing they would be on the same page, and the reverse, we've had in some radio interviews some men saying, you know, I've got a wife who, you know, used to be interested in spiritual things, but she's not now. Will this help? And because we tried to be so practical in this, in doing just day-to-day things, leaving a note, praising the positive in your spouse, finding encouraging words, taking a walk together, those are things that people can do whether they're a believer or not. But as they read this book, they will also see that element of how God is the one that kind of cements and draws the two together. So absolutely, even if a wife or a husband is thinking, can I pick up this book and read it and do my part in it? Absolutely, because sometimes when there's a divide between the two, one person has to reach across that chasm to get to the other person. They don't always just decide together, we're going to get closer together. Often it starts with one person who's willing to apply the principles and to, like we say, reach across that great divide for the other person and say, hey, I'm willing to come your direction. That'll often turn the other person's heart a little bit, too.
And that message is highlighted all throughout your book. I know at one point you actually write that to be part of God's workmanship in another person's life is to say, God, not what I need, but what my spouse needs. So how can a couple implement that step practically? What does that look like?
Well, that's in one of the first few days, day two, I believe. I called it leaving self on the shelf because, again, so many of us will say, well, you know what, you know, I've read all the books. Maybe he needs to pick up the book and read it, or he needs to do his part. I've done mine. And basically, to get to that point, that's when you end up saying, you know what, it's not what I want right now, it's what you want. And you can do that in a practical way, even in the day-to-day issues. You know what, not my choice of where to eat tonight. Where do you want to eat tonight? How would you like to spend this holiday instead of us deciding, you know, to make all the plans? What would you like to do this weekend? And even if our spouse says, you know, I just want some time to myself, being willing to say, I'm willing to budge, I'm willing to make those sacrifices so that I can serve you and give you what you want in the marriage, because love starts with just kind of dying to self and saying, you're more important. I'm going to live with more regard for you than for myself.
I think it's easy to start out there where it's like, okay, I'm going to die to myself. I'm going to die to myself. I'm going to just serve my spouse. And then about day 20 into it, it's like, okay, this is for the bird. So,
exactly.
But it is, again, that intentionality. I keep coming back to that word, but it's being intentional. And it doesn't stop. Marriage is a long journey. It is a journey of commitment. But as we intentionally focus on the opposite person, it's that whole principle that, you know, you're going to reap what you sow. And if you plant a tomato, you're going to reap a tomato. If you plant a green bean, you're going to reap a green bean. And if you continue, by the grace of God, to live that out, what you're talking and what you just said, Cindy, where you're saying, not my needs, but my spouse's needs, they can't help but reciprocate.
Got to give your scoreboard to God.
We can live spontaneously when we're reacting to our feelings. But like you said, marriage in the day-to-day comes down to being deliberate and intentional. It's based on decisions, not necessarily feelings, because the feelings aren't always there. But the decision is, I'm going to be deliberate and intentional in how I love you. And that means it's not my night to have uninterrupted sleep. It's your night to have uninterrupted sleep. So I'll get up in the middle of the night and take care of those things, or, you know, whatever those decisions look like, they have to be deliberate and intentional. It has to be that decision to show love.
Right. And, Greg, I'm sorry, you were saying, too, the scoreboard, I just vaguely heard that.
I said, in piggybacking off of what they were saying, you know, it's you got to give your scoreboard to God. In other words, stop keeping score, because, you know, we've also found, going along with what you're saying, you know, that if we're keeping score, then we're losing already. We're headed for trouble. So as soon as we start really, you know, checking to see whether I'm getting the short end of the stick or not, then it's likely through our own paradigm that we are, in fact, getting the short end of the stick. So we got to give that scoreboard back to God.
You know, the subtitle of your book is 31 days to a closer connection. And I know that there are going to be couples out there who maybe see that subtitle and think, yeah, right, you know, can a couple really draw closer together in just 31 days? But I agree with you. I believe that it can be done. But would you share how that takes place? How can a couple really grow closer in 31 days?
Yeah, I think it's the process that that we speak about in the book, Julie, that even when couples get to a point of struggle and difficulty, you know, that didn't happen overnight. You didn't get there, you know, just in one day. It was most likely a series of steps or a series of encounters or events that got you to where you feel you need to connect closer together. So what we began doing is putting together this book of a similar series of steps, just simple small steps that get you back to connecting closer. And yes, after 31 days, you're going to feel closer if you seriously put these things into place. And then to continue from there on daily, doing those things that draw you closer together. So I believe, and Cindy and I both believe, this can begin to get a couple back to the daily things that they used to do that brought them together and just made them so close.
Well, that's because it's basically a back to the basics. If you look at what each day is, they're simple things, but they're simple things that we forget to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
The power of a note, giving each other space, extending grace, making a memory, sharing your heart. And again, if we're focused on doing those things, maybe just one thing each day, I've seen changes happen in 5 days, 6 days. I got an email from a friend who said, okay, we've started the book, and already we're in a contest to outlove each other, and my husband is winning. Yay! And that was huge coming from her because her husband isn't the kind that would want to go through a book with her. And yet, as they began to focus on one thing each day, it was different than what we tend to do. We tend to kind of forget our spouse and we think about ourselves through the day, but when we're being deliberate and intentional in at least one area every day, that starts making a difference after 3, 4, 5 days.
Right. Well, I would love input from all three of you on this one. So in one word, what's maybe one simple way that couples can reconnect with each other? Hugh, let's go ahead and start with you.
One word, touch.
Okay, now you have to elaborate on it, though.
Yeah. Grabbing your wife's hand as you're walking down through the mall, a kiss goodnight before falling off to sleep, putting your arm around her shoulders, you're sitting in the movie theater. I think just that physical intimacy, you know, communicates love and communicates that you're still important to me.
Touch in an understanding way. I know some women say, you know, if it's a sexual touch, you know, it needs to be a non-sexual touch. Just the reaching out, like you said, if we're driving in the car and things are starting to get tense, or if we're just both in our own little worlds, him reaching across and grabbing my hand, that is huge. That's huge to me.
Right. Well, how about for you then, Cindy? What would you say, one word, as a simple way that couples can reconnect?
Selflessness. I have to say that needs to be the word that stays in the forefront of my mind, because that means I put myself on the shelf and I think, and I need to think of him. In whatever the situation is, that one word is, you know, I'm going to give myself the back seat and I'm going to focus on him.
Mm. That was the word that went through my mind. So we're on the same page there. I just think that marriages get in trouble when we let our guard down. It's, again, that safe haven. We give and we give and we give. And maybe it's just a struggle that I have, but I'm very keenly aware that as I pour out, you know, even pour out to my children, pour out to extended family, pour out into ministry and launching things and, you know, writing and all of the different things, I'm really intentional in that. And I keep my guard up to make sure that what I speak is edifying, what I'm saying, you know, how I communicate. And the one safe place where I retreat to is to hope that Greg will then help to satisfy all of those needs. And only God can do that. And I remember at one point in our marriage, I was interacting with my boss, and he had really made me mad. He had ticked me off, but I didn't feel the need to have to tell him that he ticked me off. I kept my composure, and I put myself on the back shelf, and I remember thinking, you know, if I give a man who means nothing to me aside from just being, you know, my boss, if I can give him that honor and respect, I should certainly be able to give that honor and respect to the man that I do love, who I've committed to be my partner for life. And so much of that stems with intentionality. And then, of course, what you just said, Cindy, with the selflessness. And that is, I think, one that we have to be mindful of every single day, because the flesh, like Paul said, you know, my spirit is willing, but my flesh is weak. And it's a great area, I think, that if we can remain selfless, it's one of those great ways, it's a simple way, that couples can reconnect. How about for you, Greg? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know me. It's hard for me to color inside the lines, so my one word is three words. It's sense of humor.
Yeah.
I repeat everything that everybody else has said, which I also certainly agree with. But I do. I think sense of humor can really make potentially explosive or really tense situations literally laughable, you know, when we catch ourselves being, you know, unreasonable or nasty, you know, to keep a sense of humor about those kind of things I think it's really important, and it goes a long, long way. If we start taking ourselves too seriously, then life just gets too serious, and it's certainly a lot more tense. There's certainly a time to be serious, but I think as a general rule, I need to be reminded from time to time to kind of keep my sense of humor about myself and about you know, certain situations that arise in life too.
We have a lot of questions coming into the chat room again. One of them was, how do you guys prevent yourself from putting expectations on one another that the other person really has no business even trying to live up to?
Wow. Well, first of all, let me answer that one. My very first book addressed that, because early in our marriage, I realized that, like so many women, I was looking to my husband to be God
right.
in my life, to just meet me in every emotional need that I had. And I had to reverse that process and start looking to God to be my spiritual husband first.
Amen.
Instead of looking to my husband to be God. So I wrote this book called Letting God Meet Your Emotional Needs, and it's Hugh's favorite of all my books, because it finally, I took the heavy expectation I had on him to be my everything, and I put that on God where it belonged, and then it freed him up to love me in the best way that he can, but I wasn't draining him dry for everything that I needed. And that's really at the core of my ministry to women today is, leave those expectations with God. Your need for security, your need for a sense of purpose, your need for self-worth, your need for all of those things that we can expect our husband or maybe even our children or other people in our lives to do. So for me, when I can still slip into that mode where I am expecting him to, he hasn't been as communicative to me, or he hasn't expressed this or that, and I have to put myself in check and say, okay, God, I need to take the bulk of that to you and help me to free him of that expectation so he can love me in the way that you've called him to. That's what I do in my part for not leaving him with so many expectations. What do you think?
Great answer.
Yeah, we on day 25, we talked about respecting each other's uniqueness, and I think that is part of the expectation process that we go through, that, you know, men and women just, you know, just respecting their differences as they are, not just as a person, but as just a man or a woman, how God has uniquely designed them, and that he had it in mind. So, you know, he thinks, and I'm pretty sure he knows what he's doing when he created each of us and our unique personalities, and just remembering that, and again, acknowledging that, you know, my husband might process a problem different than I would as a woman, and vice versa. So I think that really helps relieve some of the expectations that we place on each other. And I think finally, I'm just admitting that, you know, I'm not the report card on my wife, you know, when she's, you know, she
right.
stands before the Lord. She doesn't stand before me. And I'm not the final grade on her spirituality or, you know, what she's doing in life. You know, that's for God to, you know, to gauge for her.
I think one of the other questions that I have to ask is just, it's those day in, day out, maybe frustrations that tend to build up. And that's one of the things that they're asking to have highlighted here. You know, we've all experienced moments of frustrations, disappointments. I like how your book highlights that couples can turn those tense moments into tenderness. And you kind of alluded to that towards the beginning of the broadcast. How do they do that? And then the second part of that is there are a lot of things that originally maybe even attracted us to our spouse that now become irritants. So what are maybe the solutions or helpful hints that you guys have discovered in the last 20 years of marriage to help fall back into those qualities, back in love with those qualities?
Well, for the first part of that, we wrote a chapter called From Tense to Tender. And we talked about a situation that we have, that we've probably gone through many times. During the dinner hour, we both were kind of tense. We went out to eat. Q did some things that irritated me. I did some things that irritated him. I didn't know I was irritating him, but I saw that he was in a mood, and I got angry. And, you know, all of a sudden, all this tension is building, and we didn't even know what it was. Little silly things like that. And the tension was broken when Hugh made the first move by basically stepping on his pride and extending. He had reached across the table for my hand, and he just gave me his little pinky finger. So I gave him my pinky finger. It was kind of like, okay, I know you don't want to hold my whole hand, but maybe you can just take, you know, just the little finger here. And then, you know, he had made it into a game. Let's order something we've never ordered before. And I'm looking at him thinking, you know, I'll give you a game here. You know, I was still kind of ticked at him. And but he did some things like Greg was talking about earlier. He kept his sense of humor, and he made me laugh. And, you know, he kind of made a couple faces, and I realized he's trying right now. He's trying to break this exterior in me so that we can just lighten the mood again. And that just kind of touched my heart. And that took something that was tense, but it turned into a tender moment, mainly because he was willing to make the first move and step on his pride. And so how do you go from tense to tender? It's when you have to go, okay, my right to have this resolved in the way that I want doesn't matter anymore. The only thing that matters is that we enjoy each other's presence. The only thing that matters is that we communicate love toward each other instead of just trying to get what it is I'm wanting to get out of this situation. And, yeah, that takes going, okay, what I need right now isn't so important. I'm going to extend.
Great advice. Okay, so how about those irritants, those things that maybe were once great, you know, we were in love with that characteristic, and now all of a sudden it seems to be almost a point of irritation. How do we get back to that point where we admire that quality again and we are respectful and lavish them with even words of affection and admiration for that gift? Or do we?
Well, you know, evidently, you know, when a couple first, you know, met and they started dating, there were things that attracted them, you know, one to another. And I think it's having that dating mentality all the time or most of the time. You're remembering the times you had when you were first getting to know each other and realizing that, you know, when you went to the beach and you planned a day at the beach and it rained, you didn't care. You just made fun of it, and you did something else, and you made different plans. Or, you know, the first kiss didn't go great. You know, well, you know, you didn't care. You were just with that person that you really wanted to be with. So I think it's lowering some of those expectations and realizing, you know, what did we do when we first met, and remembering how important those were, and wow, those things really were attractive, and they made me draw close to you. And just admiring those things again.
And, you know, Julie and Greg, you know that phrase, love is blind, because when you're in love, you don't see all those things.
Right.
You know, all the imperfections. We need to adopt that kind of love is blind again, meaning choosing to be blind to the things that annoy us, remembering that, you know, there is something intrinsic in this person that really attracted me to him. And what I go back to, and I use this illustration a lot, is that when I first met Hugh, what attracted me to him is the way he was so different from me, because he was a very deep thinker. He was quiet, and I was very out there, you know, I was much more social than him, but he was, I just thought, wow, he thinks before he says things, and I admired that quality. Today I can look at him and I go, you know, you're moody. I can put a completely different, you know, spin on that. And yet the fact that he tends to think before he says something, that might irritate me, and it might make me think, well, you know, I just want him to express what he's thinking instead of just saying nothing. But then I realize he has hurt me with his words so few times because he has thought before he said something. And so what I call moody today is really a characteristic of his that I fell in love with. He thinks about things, he takes a while to process them, and then he speaks. And I saw wisdom and restraint and self-control in that originally. I need to see that again. So we have a chapter called Praising the Positive, remembering those things that first drew us to each other, remembering those things that we were first attracted to in our husband, and praising those things when we see them. Hey, thank you for being the way that you are, because I remember that's the man that I fell in love with.
Good stuff. I love the illustration that you used there too of the beach and it raining the day you're going to go to the beach or whatever, and how just as a word picture, I think most of us can relate to the fact that after a few years of marriage, you know, that we don't respond to those kind of situations as well as maybe we once did. So it's just, I really identified with that. I thought that was a great illustration on how we can bring that whimsical attitude back into our marriage, you know, and kind of go with life a little bit. So that's cool. I have a question. Tell us about the power of a note.
The power of a note. Yeah, we talk about that in day 5 of our book, and it's one of those things that we advocate in the book, Greg, about just simple acts of love, just simple practical ways to reconnect with one another. And I learned that I was able to do that as with Cindy, because she, you know, travels a lot with her speaking and writing ministry. And what I began doing was, you know, in her luggage, I would just put little notes, you know, and just kind of tuck them in the little folds of her clothing and wherever she was packing. And she would find that as we were apart, and she'd unpack in a hotel room or a conference center, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles away. And it made her realize that I was thinking of her, and that I miss her. Just simple little phrases, simple things that you can put down there that communicate, I miss you, I love you, can't wait to your home again. Today we can even, you know, even text messages, you know, that could be a note to your spouse that lets them know, you're important to me and I was thinking of you today.
That little written note means even more though, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Because you can save it. No, I mean, you can save it on your phone, but it's not the same. Yeah. I still have a note on my desk today that says, love you, wife, that Hugh wrote a few years ago, and I saw it there on my desk, and he put it with a little artificial flower there, and it was on a day when I was feeling like a total loser and nothing was going right, and he didn't even know that. But when I came home and I saw that on my desk, love you, wife, I just started to cry. I just said, thank you, God, that I am loved. How did he know I needed to see that? It was powerful to me. And again, it's still taped there to my desk.
It's, you know, and I have to interject, Julie and Greg, that, you know, as we wrote this book, as we're speaking about this, you know, we talk about the power of a note, a little note and a piece of luggage, you know, big deal. But you know what? When we wrote our book, I think a lot of couples, when they get stressed and they get to a place of struggle, you know, they're looking for the magic bullet. They're looking for the one thing that's going to change it all. I think guys think about that way. Well, if I just buy my wife a new car or I take her on a trip, it's going to solve all the problems. Well, those are nice things, but it's the little simple daily things that you do consistently that is really going to bring, I think, a lot more healing and a lot more repair in a marriage that's struggling.
Amen. Amen. You know, I think about just the importance of grace. You know, when you think about a marriage, we have to extend grace to one another. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the practical ways maybe that you've watched in other people's lives or things that God has called you to do to extend grace to your spouse? Are there some practical ways people can extend grace to their spouse?
Yeah, one of the ways is just don't assign motives. We can easily assume that our husband is late because it's not important to him to be home on time, even when we said we wanted him home on time, and that might not be happening at all. To extend grace is to say, okay, he might have a reason for why he's doing a certain thing, and I haven't heard that reason yet, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Another thing is just having that understanding. When Hugh does something that irritates me, the easiest way for me to extend grace is to realize I have a whole list of things that irritate him as well. I say in my book, for every 5 things that Hugh does that irritate me, I'm sure there are at least 10 things that I do that irritate him. And, you know, again, it comes down to that pride, putting ourselves on the shelf. When we're able to say, okay, I don't like what he did there, but I've done things like that before too, and I am fully capable of that. So I'm going to extend grace. I'm going to not assign a motive here. I'm going to be understanding, and I'm going to hope that that's the way he is toward me as well.
You know, when I think about where we are as a society, and I've counseled couples, we've had people in and out of our home, and some of the stories that they share are not just the normal everyday conflicts. It's not just maybe irritations at little frustrations, you know, of personality traits. We're talking some big, monstrous Goliaths that they're facing. What would you tell that couple who's feeling as if they just don't know that they can make it? They don't know if they can stick it out together. Any words of advice?
The first thing that comes to my mind, Julie, and the first thing that we begin to tell couples is that God is the God of the impossible. You know, He is the all-powerful Creator, and if He created the world, if He transformed us in Christ and saved us from, you know, an eternity of damnation, He can change your marriage, and
Amen.
He can come into the middle of your mess and clean it up and bring healing and repair. So I think it's believing in the power and the nature of God and who He is, recognizing that yeah, there might be some very, very hard things going on in your marriage right now. But if you're willing to commit, if both of you are willing to say, you know what, I'm not ready to give up, and I'm willing to give it a try and to let God have a try at this marriage, that's the first thing we share with people, to remind them of that. And also to remind them that, as we said before, that you didn't get to this problem overnight. And it's going to take a series of small little steps, 31 days, just every day, doing something to get you back off the ledge that you're about ready to jump over. Just one step back, a little at a time, and you're going to find things. If you commit to it, things will begin to change.
It's a comfort, too, to know that whatever situation we're in, it didn't take God by surprise. He saw everything from the beginning, and He sees the way it'll turn out as well. And we can trust Him with that. It's not like, well, if I'm going to sit down with somebody and they don't know the whole story, God knows the whole story, and he's ready to walk us through it.
That's very powerful. We're down to the last couple of minutes. Can you believe the hour has already passed by? This is crazy, and there's so much more that I'd love to talk with you about. Let's finish with this. Cindy, give us just one way that a wife can communicate love and respect to their husband, one little nugget for them to take home.
Be his cheerleader today. Be that woman who maybe you feel like you're on the sidelines if he's there at work or doing this or that, but be the one that encourages him. Every man needs a cheerleader in his life, and it needs to be his wife, not someone else.
Amen. Hugh, how about for you? How can husbands communicate love to their wife?
Well, Cindy said the wives need to be the husband's cheerleader. I would say, husbands, you know, you need to be her hero. You know, come through for her. You know, put her, make sure that she's the most important individual in this life, you know, humanly speaking, that you're there to defend her, you're there for her, you're there to rescue her, you're there to do what needs to be done to provide her the security and the safety of that marriage that she longs for.
Cindy, what's a site that they can go to get a copy of your book?
StrengthForTheSoul.com.
And if they go to that site, can they get an autographed copy from you and Hugh?
Yes. Just go ahead and email me after you place the order. Tell me the name of you and your spouse, and we'll both sign that and send that out to you.
Great. Strengthforthesoul.com. Greg, Hugh, Cindy, thanks so much. It was a pleasure having you all on the broadcast. And listeners, just want to remind you to dream big, to laugh often, and remember that God has it under control. He really does.